You're listening to Sci-Fi for Me Radio.
In Gotham, two can keep a secret if one of them is dead. What does that mean for Sci-Fi for Chicks? Find out in this podcast episode, Dirty Little Secret.
I feel that the time has come in our relationship when we should have trust with each other. Real trust. No secrets.
I 100% agree.
So here's a secret to start off. Fish Mooney's alive. I spoke to her. Good secret, huh? Say you and Falcone have been working together all this time. She said you've been playing me for a chump.
You don't believe her, do you?
Well, she did put some incidents in a different and troubling light, I must say. Your turn. Tell me another secret. A good one this time.
I took your gun. I have it right here.
That's a good secret.
I took it because I figured Mooney had called you somehow. I knew you might believe her. I think it's your turn to tell a secret.
You little dirtbag.
Tell me a secret now.
Just one more then. I'm tired of this game. That gun is loaded with blanks.
Liar. You...
Yeah. Good secret, huh?
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to Sci-Fi for Chicks. If you only knew what we said in the stuff that we cut out of these podcasts, you would know we have dirty little secrets of our own. Right, Alex?
Yes, but for that, you have to blame Jason, who insisted this podcast should be PG-13. I'm just saying, all in all, it's all boys' fault.
It's all the boys' fault. It is all the boys' fault. Hi, everyone. My name is Heather. We're here with Sci-Fi for Chicks, and I'm with Alex, of course. We are back early, Alex, because I didn't think with my schedule that we would be able to record. But Fox gave us a little present and allowed us to watch this episode early. So we'll actually get it to you on time. Yay!
Yay!
It's very nice. And it was a good episode. It was a solid episode.
Yeah. They fixed many things that we always ranted about and so fault in. And they did really well. They did really well. I enjoyed watching the episode, I have to say.
Just in case you're wondering, we are talking about Gotham Season 1, Episode 14, The Fearsome Dr. Crane, which is the first part of what they say is a two-parter, although this felt very much to me like one of their regular episodes.
Yeah.
It didn't feel like huge cliffhanger for Part 2, other than what was that last little bit. But what I thought was going to be the huge cliffhanger and tie over and all this, it felt really like a fairly good standalone episode.
Yeah, if I didn't know... They were, you know, hyping it up for a major two-episode event, like, big deal, all capital letters. I would not think it was a big deal. Because it felt like another Gotham episode. It wasn't anything special like they did with Arrow and Flash. Like, that was a big deal. That was huge and lived up to the hype. Here it was like, okay, that's a solid episode. Why am I... being excited about a two-part episode, because even in the title, you don't get, part one, part two. Mm-hmm. Sure, the episode titles are somewhat connected, because this week we get the fearsome Dr. Crane, and next week we get the Scarecrow, right? So we know the connection, but if there's a viewer out there who's been living under a rock, that doesn't know the connection between Dr. Crane and Scarecrow, they're going to be really disappointed, I have to say.
Yeah, I agree, because it seemed almost like the promotion department, whoever does the promos for upcoming episodes, thought, ooh, two-parter, we're going to make this an event. And then everybody that edited the actual episode and did the day of type promo, hey, tonight on this, didn't realize, oh, we're doing it as a two-parter? And not, this isn't a criticism on the quality of the episode. It didn't feel like a two-part episode. It didn't have this cliffhanger that related really to Dr. Crane and Scarecrow other than he gets away. And that happens a lot on Gotham, where we have somebody that gets away. So it's not like a big surprise.
Yeah, that's the problem with a show that uses so many villains that have a future, and a documented mm-hmm. one at that, right? Mm-hmm. We know certain people are not going to die on the show. Mm-hmm. And that takes away a lot of the adrenaline and nail biting and the stress and, oh my God, please don't kill Butch.
Right.
We know they're going to survive, unlike Butch, who, might I add, was nowhere to be seen, which is either very bad or very good.
We're going to be talking about this later, but I'm going to tell you that opening scene when they had the guy on the roof, I'm like, that better not be Butch. If that's Butch, and I had, Butch, no! And then we saw who it was, I was like, okay, it's not Butch. Whatever, I don't care. Go ahead, continue with the story. I'm fine now, as long as it wasn't Butch.
I'm just...
Because we love you, Drew Powell.
Yes, yes, we do. You are our favorite person in the entire universe. Please,
Yeah,
for now, but we are fickle people, but right now, you are the favorite person on Gotham and in the universe, so...
Well, you know we love him because he falls into our Dylan Bruce category, where we sought out his name and we are making sure we say his actual name. It's Drew Powell, at the Drew Powell, because he has earned his thee. Unlike Penguin, I'm still kind of on the fence about Penguin. We'll talk about that later on. So we love you, Drew Powell. You are in the special Dylan Bruce category. And if you have no idea what we're talking about,
it's
go
a
back
huge
and listen to
deal.
Our Orphan
yeah, but
Black
it's a
podcast
huge deal.
From last season. But of course you know what we're talking about, because you listen to me and Alex and go, really? Why am I continuing to listen to these crazy girls? Let's get actually into talking about the episode. We're kind of like dancing around the episode. We're going to make this into a two-parter if we're not careful. this is something you said actually before we started recording, how they finally really did a good A-B story.
They struggled. They struggled for 13 episodes, it seems.
They will again. They will again. I'm
knowing their track record, they will again. But they had serious problems in striking that perfect balance between A story and B story. And we kept being more interested in the B storyline in every episode. Mm-hmm. And all those cases that we were supposed to care about, we were like, oh yeah, Balloon Man, oh yeah, Viper, yay, oh my God, and everything.
Yeah.
But here, I was actually interested in every single part of each of the storylines. So
they balanced them well.
Yeah. They put enough emphasis on all the aspects that we were supposed to care about in the Fearsome Dr. Crane storyline, and in the Maroni Penguin thingy that was going on in the back as well. So I have to say, kudos to the writers. I'm hesitant to say that they finally found their way.
They did.
Because
they're going to mess up again.
They will probably mess up again. But for now, well done. Keep up.
They can be taught.
Yeah.
They can be taught, they're learning there. So yeah, it was a good balance throughout the episode, even with little things that they threw in to not necessarily move this story along, but move future story alongs, because that is something that we've had a problem with, Barbara, and how they move along future stories. And the first thing we wanted to talk about was really that whole Kat and Bruce and Jim, mm-hmm. where we have Kat come back into Jim's world. We have Jim coming back into Bruce's world. We have them acknowledging him not, you know, Bruce not being around and why, you know, all those little things that we have. So, but we have all of this coming back together, and you know it's not anything really for this story. It's setting up for the future, but it felt good.
It did. It did, but like you said, in a way... I wasn't entirely sure if, I know there are certain things they have to do. right? So that couple episodes in the future, we are not feeling surprised that, you know, everybody knows everything. Like, Jim had to find out that what Kat said, and that right now Kat's claim is that she hasn't seen anything.
Mm-hmm.
Which I'm, by the way, still a little skeptical about. So, yeah. But yeah, so he had to find out, but in an episode that was so well-paced and well-balanced, they could have done without it, in a way, because it didn't really, it was this tiny little thing that's important in the future, yes, 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 I know, but out of every scene that we had in this episode, those scenes were the least important. They had least amount of impact overall, because what they did was rehash information we already had. So,
something that I liked about it was we did have, again, that other side of Jim. We've had Kat, basically, Kat and Harv, both, Bullock, both have found out that, as far as Jim's concerned, Jim and Barbara are over. We know better. But,
yeah,
spoiler. That's fine. Okay, so now we have two characters, basically, putting that out there, so hopefully we don't need to see Barbara again until she has an actual reason to. But I really liked I liked how Bruce was in this. That actor, David, really, and Sean Pertwee, they both had this finality about them. The way he was like, no, she said that this wasn't, well, I think she was lying because she was scared of this. And Bruce is like, no, she wasn't scared. She didn't see them. And I release you from your bond of having to keep this promise that you're going to find my parents' murders. I'll still find them, but I don't need you anymore. So I think we've had this little vignette into Batman, and we see him, you know, like after he broke the snow globe in that last episode, and Alfred was doing, are you gonna cry about it, or are we gonna get a broom? We're gonna get a broom. And I see them now moving on this path, that he's not so reliant on Jim, he's not looking to Jim as his parental figure, he's actually looking more inward, for good or bad, but that's a very Batman trait, that he's going in for his answers as opposed to looking for them on the out. And I really liked that scene, and knowing that it's not going to be this constant Jim coming to Bruce, I'm going to find who killed your parents. I'm going to find who killed your parents. Don't worry. I'm going to find who killed your parents. Bruce is put an end to that and says, yeah, don't worry. I'm releasing you from your promise. And then Alfred with his, here's your hat. What's your hurry? Alfred's not too keen on Jim anymore either.
Yeah. In a way, maybe it's for the best. I mean, the last thing we want is for Jim and Bruce's interactions to be all about the murder of their parents.
Right. It's got to move past that.
Yeah. So maybe it's for the best. I would probably be more happy with those scenes if they put it somewhere else. I don't know, but still, yeah, you're right about the scenes.
Wait,
yeah.
Wait, I need to notate that. What time is that Alex said I was right?
About this tiny little thing, not about everything ever. I'm just saying, you know.
I'll take what I can get. I will so take what I can get. And let's keep on with Jim. Let's move on with Jim. And move to a character that we actually really want to move over to the Bruce and Alfred camp. And the way they're setting it up, I don't know if it's going to happen. Jim and Lee.
Here's a side note. Because I've been thinking about this ever since I finished the episode. Because
20 minutes ago or so.
oh, come on. It's been an hour. give me some credit. But anyway, what I've been thinking about is that maybe in their haste to give the people the show they think they need, or want. The writers kind of wrote in Barbara a little too soon. Because in this episode, I realized that if they didn't introduce Barbara as already in relationship with Jim, nobody would actually mind. Because we already know that he ends up with Barbara. They get married, they have children, and all that shtick. So if they actually didn't write Barbara in right now, in the first season, I wouldn't probably mind his relationship with Lee as much. Because I would see that relationship in a completely different light. I would see it as a relationship in its own right. And at the same time, it would be this kind of doomed romance that only we know is doomed.
Right.
And it would add so much more depth to it, so much more intensity, and it wouldn't really rely on anything else because we would know they're not going to work out. But they would, in canon, in the show, they would work for it anyway, wanting it to work out. And it would be so deliciously tragic. I would really love that. But here we have Barbara, a character with so much wasted potential. And I was just so sad. Because that was an idea that occurred to me. And if it occurred to me, there is no way that it didn't occur to somebody else.
Exactly.
So...
Well, and the way Jim is treating the whole thing, again, not that he should be crying and rocking in a corner because of Barbara leaving him, but everything is just like nothing ever happened. He walks into Barbara's to leave the keys. He walks in, and no, yeah, I guess we're over. Hey, Dr. Tompkins. You know, trying to do all these things. His line, like, yeah, that's right. Mock my crude dating skills. Ha ha ha. It's not as cute.
Exactly.
Because of the Barbara thing. It's not as compelling as the Barbara thing. Then her doing that whole at the end, I'm going to lean in and you're going to kiss me on the cheek or no date kind of thing. It's not as, as it would have been. You're right. If, I said it too. This is the podcast when both of us are right. If we hadn't had all that Barbara stuff in the beginning, And she had come in as a stronger character in some other way.
And can you imagine if later. We actually saw her relationship with Renee develop on the show right now?
Mm-hmm.
And that would be another doomed romance that I would get so much behind. Because, oh my God, we know that Jim and Barbara get together, but they have those two happy relationships right now. Mm-hmm. And even though we would be happy for them to get together, because there's, you know, destiny, you know they end up together, it would be at the same time heartbreaking, because we would get two other people who we got close to losing the love of their lives, maybe, possibly, perhaps.
Well, that's okay, because I think I want Lee to go over and get on with Alfred.
I know, but...
I want to see that.
It would be so much, it would be so easy to make it mean something if they went that way. Yeah. But here we have like cheating and plot holes and...
As opposed to Barbara, the only thing she's really done is she helped move on the whole thing when the kids got kidnapped, and then she was the impetus for Jim not arresting Falcone.
Yeah.
But giving in. And that's it. What else has she really... contributed to the story, and we could have found other ways to get through those two. So God, we keep coming back and ranting about the Barbara thing. This is how much this is upsetting to us writers, that you're wasting such a good character and such an good actress. I love what she was doing when she was on screen. She just wasn't given anything to really do. And we're supposed to be talking about Jim and Lee, Marina.
We were talking about them.
So Marina, we love you, but we're just still upset about this, because if we hadn't had that Barbara stuff, your storyline right now would be that much more compelling.
Exactly.
But we are going to be seeing more of her, as we know, and since she is probably now going to be the new ME, this is how we're going to get her out of Arkham. So we're losing an Arkham tie. Arkham was this big thing, this big deal. Oh my gosh, we're going to Arkham. And we went to Arkham for an episode, plus her holding over. And now she's coming out of Arkham. It's like, again, we have no Arkham tie. Something else with the writers. It's like you keep building up to these big, oh my God, oh my God, oh my gods.
Yeah,
that are just kind of, oh my, it becomes, oh my, whatever, whatever.
Yeah, a lot of the stuff is kind of anticlimactic. It just,
yeah.
Oh my God, this is going to be so, and then what happened?
Not so much, not so much. Okay, I'm gonna kind of skip our order here a little bit and go to another relationship one that I actually did like, and a character that we have talked about. They just keep inserting him for no reason other than, hey, we're going to dangle this character in front of you that you know is going to become a big baddie on there. And we have Ed and Essen and Miss Kringle, and Ed just not being able to know when to stop. He just wants to look at this body. He has all this information from his crime scene, looking at the body that we had at the beginning that died of fear, basically, and gets so into it. Let's talk a little bit about Ed and Miss Kringle and Essen, because she's a big part of his story there as well.
Mm, yeah, well, Ed continues to uphold his title as a creepy creeper that creeps, although he was notably
he was a sweet creepy. Creep.
He was less creepy in this episode.
He was a sweet creep.
Yeah,
he was a sweet creep.
Sweet creep, seriously. We cannot have levels of creepiness.
Oh, come on. You can't tell me that when he was like with the body and the Emmy comes in with Essen and Essen suspends him and they both leave and he goes, but I found something, that you didn't go, oh, he found something. Wait, why am I being that way around Ed? Yeah, but I did. Well, I was like, oh, he found something. Let him talk.
I will allow that he was less creepy, but only because of the way Miss Kringle reacted to him in this episode. Mm-hmm. If you've noticed, but she was considerably less freaked out by him.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't know if it's a good thing, because girl, you are sending mixed signals right there. And I don't know if you want to do that, or if he actually wore her down and she's starting to like him.
I think it's when he came in, that time that he came in to tell her that he'd been suspended and he wasn't going to be around, and she's crying. And he actually showed, you know, it's like, are you okay? And she's like, no, get away. And, you know, she, the creep thing comes up. No, you can't come in. And then he gives her back that teeny tiny little pencil.
Yes.
Says it was longer. Again, I'm like, oh, that's just so cute. I'm not supposed to be saying this about you because you're going to be the Riddler, but that's just so cute.
But see, and this is the difference between a cupcake with a bullet and a cute little pencil.
This was your pencil that I kept meaning to return. It was longer. I'm just like, it's just so cute. And it was a nice tie-in at the end, because she's still keeping her distance. She's still, you know, arm's length with him. But that moment at the end when, again, like, you know, you said, she doesn't realize what she's doing, what she's setting into place. We do, because we know the future. However it's going to play out, actually, we do know the future. And her saying, you still owe me a pencil. It's like, that's really cute. Uh-oh, you're in trouble, girl. But that's so cute. You know, it was actually a really sweet moment, sweet interaction. And I think it is, there is something there that, you know, Miss Kringle does have something else going on.
Probably, yeah.
Miss Kringle does have something else going on, you know. And when we with the crying, why was she crying? What was going on? What's, you know, so I'm hoping that leads a little bit more towards maybe something in Riddler comes out because of what somebody is doing or putting Miss Kringle through, as opposed to Miss Kringle is leading him on and then pushes him away and he snaps. I'm hoping maybe we go a little bit more that way.
We'll see.
I don't know. Because, we'll see when it comes.
Well, we can see already some of those little twisted things, because who do you think put all those body parts in the old Emmy's locker?
Oh, well, you saw him come in with that big big bag, duffel bag. And you know, I'm thinking like eight heads in a duffel bag kind of thing. There's a few more than eight heads. That was him just, you know, coming in, whistling, picking the lock. I'm like, what are you doing? And then when the Emmy opened it and all those body parts come out, I'm like, oh my God. And can I tell you, one of my other favorite things was later on when Essen, I think she was talking to Jim, and she's like this guy going, you know, cat, you know, chief. Yeah. Yeah. Whatever. Don't, you know, what is that? You know, she's, you know, the cop is just holding this arm. Is yeah, that's not what I think it is. This, is it? Yeah. And he's just kind of like, eh. You're just standing there holding an arm. Like nothing's happened.
It was
a fun moment.
It was hilarious and really good comic relief. Plus, I liked the way it pushed everything along. I mean, because of the conflict between Ed the Creeper and the ME, Lee now has a new job, or will have a new job.
Yeah. So. Oh, she does. By the time we come back, she's the new ME.
Please.
But it also did, I think it helped show a little bit of Essen's side, too. We're seeing some more of her. And even though... I love that one little line there. I love when she's telling Jim again, you know, you need to be more optimistic, you know, with it, you know, her saying, you've got to calm down. You've got, you know, take the wins that you can get. And when I think it was Jim said, I'm sorry. And she said, don't be, it felt good. You're seeing more of Essen coming out. You see that she really was upset to suspend Ed. She really, you know, she's really doing this tie in there. She's it's taking her longer to come over to the good side, but she's fleshing out as a character more. And I like that. And I'm wondering if she's going to stay in this whole Ed circle, because I think that works for her, is being in that when Ed's in the story, she's in the story. Because I think everybody needs to have a tie. They need to have the characters that they can best relate with, as opposed to trying to relate to everybody across the board, because then you actually get to see things come out in them and they get to be important as opposed to just being
a grain of salt
on every story. Let's season one story. Well, so
okay, first of all, on my side, it's I loved her hair this episode. I know it's superficial and all that, but her hair, the way she had them done in that ponytail.
The faux hawk? Yes. The faux hawk kind of thing there. Yeah.
It was brilliant. I loved, she looked amazing. So props to the hair department. But I also liked, how the episode showcased her relationship not only with Ed, but also with Bullock. When she told Bullock to step away from the edge, you know.
Oh, yeah.
It was, what she was telling him wasn't only, you know, step away from the edge, but also, I don't want to lose you. I don't want to lose, you know, another good cop in my precinct now that we are all supposed to be good cops. And I think from the way she interacted with Ed, to come back to your point, I think, unlike with Bullock, I don't think Ed irritates her.
No, I don't think so.
She sees him as this quirky little character. But I think she sees through that and appreciates his knowledge and the actual, you know, things that he brings to the case and the way they are able to, you know, get new leads because of what Ed finds. And I don't think she minds the way Ed tries to pass on that knowledge through ridiculous riddles and all that. Because when he asks
Unlike Bullock.
Yeah. When he tells the riddle, she is not as annoyed as Bullock is. It's not, you know, oh my God, you are so stupid, please stop. It's, oh, that's Ed again. Let's move on and tell us the information.
Exactly.
And I liked it. I liked it because we can't have all the characters see only the creepy, irritating part of Ed. Because then it would be, well, unbelievable that it would take him so long to become a villain.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and like you're saying, she's protecting, when we started the series, I think if a cop died, it would be more, that's paperwork, that looks bad on me, you know, very self-serving.
Yeah.
And now she's seeing that she knows there's all these factions in the police department. There's the ones that were on Flass's side, so we've got to be careful on this. But she's building her family and her family of good, and she's not going to go headlong like Jim does in doing the right thing, doing the good thing. But she's like, I want to keep moving that way, and I want to keep all of you around. I don't want anything to happen to Jim, to Bullock, to Ed. I think Ed is definitely, yeah, in her her area there, and I'm sure soon Lee will be as well. She's building her own little GCPD family.
She's doing it the smart way, basically. She's doing it the smart way. Slow, yeah. Small steps, change. Everybody hates change. I can assert to that because I hate change as well.
She hates change, yeah, she does.
But she does takes small steps and makes sure that she keeps both the big picture in her mind and the small things that need to be done to accomplish the big goal that they now have of, you know, having honest cops and not only Montoya and Alan.
Yeah, around, exactly. So. And she's doing it that step at a time, whereas Jim's seeing the whole big picture. And then you have Bullock, who's kind of in the middle of that. He has moments of seeing the whole big picture and he wants everything to be great. And then he has moments where it's like, no, let's not move too far too fast. Jim, you're being kind of rash. And then he has this moment that I saw instantly, and it wasn't because it was telegraphed. It wasn't really telegraphed. It wasn't super obvious, super sappy on his face. That moment, that very moment at the beginning when he's investigating this and he meets the Miss Mullins, who is the witness, but the only contact I guess they have in the guy that did die, mm-hmm. and she walks in and I'm gonna give her props. Great, because I love that her character deduces, well, how did you know it was a murder? It's like, well, you know, you called me down to the homicide division. You're a homicide cop. It's like, let
what
me
else
guess.
Can you call me about? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, come on, I'm not stupid here. Instantly, you know, especially like when she goes, don't be an ass. I know you're about to make fun of these people, you know, she starts calling him on things instantly, and he is instantly infatuated with this woman. And it was just, I mean, the thing, you know, it's like, I have, don't be an ass. That's something the chick would say to Bullock. You know, I love that the chick is saying that to Bullock. And the next line I wrote is, he likes her. Just,
he does.
Like when he said, are you Irish? Just curious. So would you go to dinner after the meetings? You know, it's like, you are so cute.
He is, and the way when she walks away and he keeps staring after her, even when Jim comes up to him and starts talking, Bullock is barely registering his favorite person standing next to him, because there's this redhead and she is leaving, and I bet you that Bullock wanted to go after her, maybe a little bit, because she left an impression.
Mm-hmm.
And as the kids say these days, I ship it.
That it was just so cute, because you could tell. But it's not because he was doing like little doe eyes or being all, you know, humming, you know, with her. It was just, it was just this instant, like he knew instantaneously, I like this girl. And I hope that this is not the end of her. I hope this was not a flash in the pan storyline that it just helped this story. I do hope this is around there. And it's kind of funny. I was thinking, because in our last podcast, you know, I asked the question, do we want to learn more about their personal lives? Do we want to see more? Do we want them to know more about their personal lives? Do we want Jim and Bullock to share? And you're like, no, I don't think I want to. And then we start watching this. I'm like, oh, well, Alex, sorry. We're going to learn more. I love Bullock telling Jim, you know, it's like, oh, so you and Barbara are done, and now you're with the doctor. And he says, the thought of what you would do alone is truly terrifying.
Yes, because
if he's being this way when he's got someone.
Yeah, he did all that while getting laid. So, yeah.
Exactly.
It's terrifying.
And And then when Bullock starts, you know, like he's going after, he's doing, I've got to go after, I've got to go do this. The look on Jim's face when he was just almost giggling with glee that, oh, Bullock likes her. Look at that.
Jim so was 2 seconds from doing that old song, you know, Bullock and the Red Hat sitting in the tree.
It was just so cute. And, you know, him calling her, which I have 2 Sleepy Hollow notes in this. My Sleepy Hollow note, you notice how they all have flip phones? Even mm-hmm. Ichabod Crane has a smartphone now. They still have flip phones. But him calling and, you know, getting the voicemails and, you know, gets a voicemail from her and he goes to the meeting and he has, of course, his thing. I'm scared all the time. Yeah, you know, he's sharing as well. And I'm like, you're not just doing that to be a part of the group. You're doing that to be vulnerable and
in front of
her.
Yeah.
Just like, you are so cute. I love it. So I'm hoping that she is just not a storyline for this and we're not going to see her again. I mean, when he, you know, realized they've been gone a long time, haven't they? And he chases out and sees them pull away and he's running after them and dives into the pool to save her, I don't understand why he needed to cut the ropes because it's not like she was weighted down. Just pull her up. You don't need her hands free for you to pull her up out of the water, but I know, made for better television to have to do something under the water, seriously. Yeah. But that was so cute and the mouth to mouth and aww.
Okay.
He's her hero. Well, no, he's her hero now.
Yeah, but I want her to show up in other episodes mostly because if she does, then it's like a bigger story. If she doesn't, she's just a damsel in distress that he had to rescue, and it would make his infatuation a little less cute.
Right.
Basically. So, yeah.
I'm okay with her being the damsel in the distress for that part of the story because she didn't come in as a damsel in distress. She came in very, she was very knowledgeable. She wasn't going to let him get away with anything. I mean, one of her first lines to him was, don't be an ass.
Yeah, but
you know, she's already
if she doesn't come back, then it means that that infatuation was just, you know, whatever. And even though it had incredible impact on everything in this episode, on Bullock especially, it would cheapen it if she was just a mm-hmm. one-episode wonder, basically.
Oh, definitely. She needs to stick around. She does, and not just because you're a redhead and she's a redhead
and we
you're
like
sticking
her,
up for the redheads.
redheads represent.
She needs to. I think Bullock needs that, too. We need mm-hmm. to see that, because right now all we've seen of Bullock was that time that he thought that he was going to die the next day when they were going to arrest Falcone. And so he got his usual, you know, woman and booze and let's just have a fun party night. I think Bullock is ready because of his relationship with Jim, because of what he's doing with Jim and being a good cop and wanting a better life, not just existing today, but a better life for everybody. He wants a better life now too. So,
and with
how quickly he was infatuated with her. Are you Irish? Just kidding.
Yes.
Okay. Another character that was just curious. Let's move into our baddie of this episode was Dr. Crane, because he was just curious at what level of fear all these people were getting before they died. Miss Mullen only got to an 8 until he said that he was about to kill her, and they got to a 10. I guess 12 was the highest. What did you think of? Well, we have Julian Sands, the incredible Julian Sands, doing our baddie Dr. Crane. And how do you go wrong with him? He is handsomely creepy and menacing. Talk about what you think about this storyline.
Here's the thing. I would be more satisfied with Dr. Crane. Mm-hmm. If it wasn't built up and hyped up to be the, you know, oh my god, two-parter and everything. Because his storyline was solid and it was good, but because of all the hype, I ended up being disappointed. Mm-hmm. And not in a bad way that it was, you know, mm-hmm. terrible balloon man extravaganza again. No, it was...
Although we did see that Balloon Man mask. Did you notice? Did you see the pig mask thing? I was like, yeah. Oh, God, no, not Balloon Man.
Yeah, but in a way, I was disappointed because...
That was the fear in my heart.
It didn't live up to the expectations that they set up.
Mm-mm.
It was a solid case, and he was very good, but he wasn't brilliant. And this storyline, in this episode at least, it wasn't brilliant, and I expected brilliance from the, you know, two-parter, and it's going to be Crane, yeah. And Crane is so big and awesome that we need two episodes, because you know what it made me think about? Gruber. And how we got hyped up, because he escaped Arkham, and it's going to be awesome and amazing, and then we got big, whoops, glass of water can defeat you. Oh, no.
Well, maybe it's a flip hype, because... I didn't really see any promotion for Gruber and what was happening there with Arkham in being this big two-parter or whatever. We hyped ourselves up by who the actor was and how he was portraying it and that he was coming from Arkham and he was so menacing. And then he escapes and, oh my gosh, this is going to be incredible. And then the next episode, it was like, huh, okay. I'm hoping we'll see next week. Maybe this is a flip where right now we're going, huh, okay. And next episode, hopefully, it will explode. So I'm hoping, I'm going to give them the second part of this because, yeah, they've been hyping this as a two-part and it needs that pow. It needs that, you know what, actually, it kind of made me think of, if you go into the Star Trek world, Next Generation, one of the best ever cliffhangers ever in the history of cliffhangers was Best of Both Worlds Part One, where Picard, he is now loquacious, he's on the Borg ship, and everything's happening, and they're going after Earth, and we end with Riker going, fire. He's telling them, fire, on his captain, that he is faithful to, and all this, and fire, and then you have to wait till next season, and then you come back, and it's fire, and nothing happens. So it was like the most disappointing cliffhanger resolution from the most incredible cliffhanger. That's what... Jack Gruber felt like to me.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping they flip this with, because you don't waste Julian Sands. You've already wasted
Christopher
Heyerdahl. Don't waste Julian Sands. Please. Please.
Okay. Let's give them the benefit of the doubt.
I mean, we'll give them 1 week.
You guys have 1 week to convince us that you haven't wasted this. And that you truly found the balance and you are writing the show that we're watching and not the show you'd like to write, Batman. So mm-hmm. Yeah, I am fine. I will be nice. I will be understanding. I will give them the benefit of the doubt. And then when they fail me, I will be gloriously smug about it, but fine. Let's do it your way. Let's do it the nice way.
Well, maybe I'm a little bit more forgiving because, you know, like I was looking up some things on Crane and Scarecrow and all this, and it does have this line in there about, especially because of his resemblance to Ichabod Crane from The Legend of Sleepy Hollow and talking about his backstory. So maybe I'm like, oh, Sleepy Hollow. Yeah, you gotta listen to our Sleepy Hollow podcast about the episode that airs right after this episode of Gotham because... Oh my God. So maybe I'm a little bit more generous because of that. I don't know, but, and then we see his son, of course. So we're going to see how everything plays out. His son that is going to grow up to be Scarecrow.
Sam Murphy.
Scarecrow. Actually, that kid, I looked at him and I'm like, you could grow up to be him. I see the resemblance.
Yeah, he could grow up to be Cillian Murphy.
He really could. I think that was like the moment when he walked in, I went, huh, well, that's good casting.
Yeah, they did well on this one. And I wonder how much of a role he's going to get in the second episode. Or
he's got to have something.
If he was just, you know, a throwaway, look, this is a future Scarecrow.
I think he's got to have something because Dr. Crane's thing was his fear was... the failure and his son, you know, his son seeing that and passing it on to his son.
Mm.
So, I mean, they've kind of already set it up there. So I have a feeling that he's got to play something more than just, you know, go put more money in the meter. Really? This is Gotham. You're worried about a parking ticket? Really?
Yeah, let's not question that. Let's just move on.
We're going to move on now because we're going to get to the whole dirty little secret aspect of this. Because even though there's little secrets, we have little love secrets that we've seen so far and all that, that, you know, that might get dirty. You never know. But that's a whole other podcast.
Yeah.
Let's get to the real criminal, supervillain, mastermindy, whatever aspect of this, which is the whole Penguin, Maroni, and Fish. Okay, I'm going to start with my little rant. Penguin, 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 Penguin. Really? You do that to Fish? You tell on Fish? You tell Fish that you told on Fish? And you don't think that maybe somehow it's going to come back to bite you in your little Penguin tuxedo butt? Really?
I think Penguin was counting too much on the fact that, Fish was supposed to now be suffering at the hands of Victor Zsasz.
Yeah.
So he just made assumptions.
We know what happens when you assume.
Yeah. So, well, I see where that mistake came from. Mostly because, for once, like Fish through the entire season so far, that was a moment when Penguin wasn't playing the game he was supposed to play. He made assumptions. Mm-hmm. He missed possibilities, in a way.
Mm-hmm.
And
big time.
Yeah. So it came back to bite him, very much like it did with Fish. And, of course, like any other Penguin storyline, it didn't exactly hold much tension in it, even though it was suspenseful and intense in a way that they were playing it. But we know he's going to live. So anytime his life is at stake, I'm like, okay. This is something they want to show us, and I don't care.
All those little things, you know, Maroni is having this realization moment that Falcone is, which puts them both squarely in this duped Don kind of category. It's like, Maroni, you're just like Falcone. I hate to tell you this, but you really are just like Falcone because he got duped as well. But him going, let's take a drive. Let's go upstate to see a guy about a thing. And Penguin goes with him. It's like, I understand you can't get out of it, but, you know, as soon as that happens, what does he fall back on? You know, getting the gun, it's like, if it's that easy to get the gun, you know something's wrong with it. It would have played so much better if he had tried to, if he pulled the gun, I have your gun, and then maybe gave it to Maroni. You know, like, let me pull it around and give it to you.
I thought that was what Penguin is going to do. I honestly thought that would be how the things went. Because the moment he said, I have your gun, and Maroni goes, that's a good secret. And then Penguin gives Maroni the gun back, and I don't know, spins some sort of,
Fish was just lying. She was pulling, you know, Fish got exposed. She's just retaliating the only way she knows how, and Fish has hated me from the get-go. He could have spun it so many different ways. And I know it's because we have to get now where he's yet again on the run. Yet again, what is he doing? But, you know, like seeing that scene when he was begging for his life, I'm like, we've done there. We've been there. We've done that. We've done the you trying to make deals. I don't like that. It was just, you weren't playing, again, he wasn't playing smart. And it's really annoying me.
And from the very beginning, from the moment he was introduced, I adored Maroni. Because not only he's played by an actor that I really like seeing, even though I have no idea what his name is, but I like seeing him. I enjoy the way he portrays his characters. You know? Here, I was like, dude, what are you doing? Penguin just called you. Penguin just called you. And what, you're going to leave the phone with him? That was my one problem, big problem that I had with the situation. And then what I had with Penguin, he said to the operator of the crusher that he called Falcone. Why didn't he call Falcone?
I think because Falcone wouldn't, well, I don't think Falcone would have gotten there in time, and I don't think Falcone necessarily would have cared.
Yep, I don't know. Still, the phone cracked me up, and not in a good way.
I liked the phone call to Maroni. I thought that was funny, as he's being crushed.
Yeah.
But I'm like, this isn't necessarily a moment when I want funny. By the way, the actor's name is David Zayas. David Zayas. Sorry, I'm flashing back to The Simpsons on that one.
David, yes. But...
Yeah. So that's his... So yeah, it just... It's like, it kept having these moments of tension. It was that scene in front of the fireplace with all the dirty little secrets.
Mm.
That was fabulous. Sitting right there, face to face. That tension that's building up. I tell a secret, you tell a secret. That was good. And you could see Penguin going, I have no idea what secret I can tell. I've told you everything. I've been good. And then it's his, no, you've got to tell me a secret now. I don't like oatmeal. That's a good secret, you know. And then you can see Maroni just playing with it. He's a cat with a mouse that thinks the mouse thinks is going to get away. It was so beautiful. And the minute Penguin fired the gun, it all went downhill.
Mm.
All went downhill. But everything that was there,
well thought out. It was well thought out on Maroni's side. Because that was incredible, because you could see the realization on Penguin's face. Oh my god, they were blanks. And how everything around him crumbled.
Yeah.
And I think, in a way, if I was Maroni, I would enjoy watching that. Just like I
that was... Him.
Yeah.
On Maroni's side, it was beautifully played on Maroni's side.
Yeah.
But we know that Maroni and Falcone, we love them. They're being so much more than we ever anticipated. I mean, I remember us talking about those first few episodes, and we're like, yeah, let's get rid of these crime bosses. We know they're nothing. We're not going to be talking about them. They mean nothing. And they have come to show that they are an integral part of this series. I mean, like, on this listing here, they have Maroni listed as a recurring character. I'm like, no. As far as I'm concerned, Maroni and Falcone are main characters. They are important and integral to the story.
But I think, in a way... It's because of the penguin size. But in a way, it's because of the actors that play them. If it was anyone else, we would probably not get so attached to them.
Well, no, but what I mean is, you know, here are these characters that we thought were nothing that really have become something. And then we have this character that we love. We love the character, Penguin. We love the actor playing the character, Robin Lord Taylor. And every episode, this is like him, Penguin and Barbara keep going back and forth as our most disappointing characters, because Penguin fell back again. Maroni played the dirty little secrets perfect, and Penguin again, one step forward, three steps back. I mean, he keeps falling further back on his steps forward. And that irritated me. And he gets away by the skin of his teeth. The skin of his teeth. And it's getting old. It's getting really... Story's tiresome with that.
It's been there, done that multiple times now, and we're only on episode 14. So how much of this, of the same thing, can we take? Seriously, it's unoriginal, and it's starting to be jarring in comparison to all the other storylines and the way the characters are developed.
Do you realize that it was only 7 episodes ago that we had Penguin's Umbrella? which had that incredible scene where we find out that Penguin has been working for Falcone this whole time, that Penguin, or, you know, has been on that side. It was 7 episodes ago that we had that, oh, Penguin, we forgive you for all of your mistakes, because now we see there was a bigger picture, and ever since then,
it's just been downhill from there.
Yeah. Incredibly. And so please, please, write Barbara smarter, write Penguin smarter, because Penguin is one of the top supervillains in Batman's world. And he can't be this stupid all the time. He needs to be more forward thinking.
He needs to be more consistent. I don't care if he's stupid, as long as he's consistent in being in his stupidity. And he's not.
Well, he consistently keeps falling back, yeah. But at least, you know, on the plus side, I'll say he's let Falcone shine and he's let Maroni shine. So
oh, yeah.
I guess definitely. There's some props there. So I guess kudos to you, David Zayas.
Yes.
Yeah. Kudos to David Zayas for really that tension. That scene of the Dirty Little Secrets, to me, that was right out of any mobster movie.
Mm.
A high class one, not some little knockoff one. You proved your salts.
Mm. It was It was probably the strongest and the best scene in the episode, actually.
Yeah.
Because it had my attention completely.
Well, I was sucked in. I was so sucked in. The other scene that I think probably had your attention and was very short, we see Fish has escaped after she snitches. She snitched on the snitch. So that make her double snitch?
Karma.
Triple snitch. Snitcher. It comes back to bite you in the butt. She gets on a boat. Obviously, this captain, whatever, is willing to protect her. She's got a pretty nice stateroom for a boat. I do have to say that. And everything seems to be hunky-dory. I'm going to return to Gotham. Don't you worry about it. Da, 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 da. I'm just taking a vacation. But at the end, when she hears the gunfire, and the captain comes forward and is like, I'll get you. You know, I'm going to get you to safety. But yeah, don't ever believe that as the gun bullets go, you know, piercing through his chest. Go ahead. Talk about that end scene.
Why am I always the one who talks about stuff? But
because it's Fish. I'm driving the train. You're the one that's navigating. Yeah.
It is Fish. And I loved the way when she saw the guy, pirate, person, mercenary, whoever he is, when she saw him, you could see no fear on her face. No, because she is Fish, and she is going to take him down. He is the one who should be afraid. I loved that power, that strength, that confidence that was in her entire
animal
language.
She was an animal in that one. She was not a fish. And unless she was a shark. I just saw like caged, you know, like tiger or something, just ready to pounce.
He stands between Fish and her freedom and her life. I pity him.
Now, what do you think it was? See, I kind of got a sense of recognition from her. She knew who this person was. I have to admit, I did not go back and freeze frame at all. I didn't go back and look and try and see who this was, because I was so focused on her. This her, as she hunches down and starts running towards. But I got a sense that this was recognition, somebody that she knows.
Okay, in that case, if this scene ends up in them hugging, it was a good build-up.
I don't think this is a best of both worlds. I'm going to hug you. Yeah, no, I don't think it's that. I think...
Hey, I don't think it's that. All you know, he can be her brother or something. I don't know. But I am looking forward to finding out. Because either dies horribly or ends up helping her.
Yeah.
Those are the two options, because I do not even acknowledge the possibility of her dying. She is too awesome, too amazing, and it's too early on for it to happen.
This isn't The Walking Dead. This isn't The Walking Dead. We're not going to be killing major characters off. We're gonna be. I think Gotham is still pretty much in red shirt territory. Just exactly. Don't be a red shirt, and you're okay.
Lots of red shirts are gonna die in the show. Green. Not her. She is wearing green, so she's safe.
He's got that jumpsuit that she had. She's got that command jumpsuit. That's what she was wearing. I'm interested to see who that is going to be and what's going to happen there. And I think that we're going to see the side of Fish that we want to see, because just like we've been talking about how, well, she did too, Jada Pinkett Smith, how Fish has been playing a game, but the wrong game, not the game that was really being played. Yeah. She now knows. She's leveled the playing field, and she is, everybody, her, Maroni, Penguin, even, because look at Penguin when he gets found by the church ladies.
That's hilarious.
That. It's so cute. He was just so, you know, like the mama's boy kind of thing, and how he's dealing with them. But when he got on the bus and he's pouting in the back, I'm like, okay, rage is building up in him. Rage is building up in Fish. We have rage that's going to be building up in Falcone and Maroni. I mean, this is, I hope all of this is really leading towards
up to something
massive.
Yeah.
That is just explosive, where everybody is like, we're not playing this gentleman's game anymore. We're not, it's not this calm, cool surface.
It's not a game anymore. It is all out war. It's free for all.
Yeah. Yeah.
I am waiting.
I'm really hoping that's where we're going, because that's what I'm seeing in everybody, is this rage building up. And I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, definitely.
Looking forward, we have what is supposed to be the second half of this two-parter that didn't feel like a two-parter at all. Next week's episode is called Scarecrow. So hopefully we'll have a little bit more there, and hopefully we'll have some more Fish. And hopefully if Penguin is back in this episode, he'll be a little bit more consequential and a little more thought-provoking. Hopefully Miss Mullins and Harvey have gone out on that date.
Possibly.
Maybe they'll double date with Jim and Lee.
Oh, that Heather, would be scary. I think that would be the moment when we finish the episode.
That would be so funny. I'm just sorry, having this mental image of a cute little, like, 50s double date. So we will see you next week. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure to subscribe to us on iTunes using the link on our website, and follow us on Twitter at Sci-Fi for Chicks. You want to tell us what you thought of this episode, if it's a two-parter or not? You can email us, sci-fi for chicks@sci-fi4me.com, or call the hotline at 573-427-2434, also known as 573-42 Sci-Fi. And make sure to check out all the other great shows and posts and podcasts over on sci-fi4me.com. Jason does written reviews of Gotham. Let's see what he thinks. Of course, Alex and I know that we're more right than he is, even though he's the DC fan.
He's also a boy, so we're right. Clearly he's wrong.
He's a boy, so what does he know? Jason is also part of another podcast that we have called Rogues Gallery, which talks about DC. So it's Gotham will be in there, but it's not just Gotham. It's going to be all the DC shows like Arrow and Flash. And so make sure and check that out. We will be back next week again to talk about Scarecrow. Alex, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to all our listeners. Bye-bye.
See you next week. Same bat time, same bat station.
This has been a presentation of SciFiForMe.com. Copyright 2015 by Flaming Dog Media, LLC. All rights reserved. No portion of this program may be retransmitted without the express written consent of Flaming Dog Media.